Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
Shout out this week goes to J. Michael T. Let me start that over. Shout out this week to J. Michael T., who's become a Major Spoilers show patron, and to Nicholas Lindstrom, who has signed up this past week to become a yearly patron. If you'd like to hear your name at the top of this show, all you got to do is point your browser to patreon.com/majorspoilers, sign up, and we will dedicate a show just to you.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, it's Ape Law versus the Prime Directive in an all-out brawl. Star Trek, Planet of the Apes, because reasons. Also, we'll look at the upcoming year in games, some television, some movies, sample the comics of today, and begin to dance around. There must have been some magic in that podcast. Load it down, because when we place this in your head, you'll know for sure the Major Spoilers podcast has decked the halls and lit the shamash, and it's on the air.
Welcome to issue 9 of 55 of the Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out this week. No Ashley, she's doing holiday acting stuff and then she's going on vacation. So she's going to be off for a while. And I think if she's not, she tried out for a part today. So we're wishing her all the best fortune in the world. Hopefully she gets that. And maybe we will get to see her in the new year with new fantastic news just like that. So anyway, I've got the other people here. We'll get some more people on the show next year as well. How about we jump into some news?
Did you just
kick things off with Colin Farrell plays the Penguin in the upcoming The Batman movie starring Robert Pattinson. And we also hear today that the actor is going to reprise the role in an HBO series that follows the Penguin's rise to power. If the series gets a green light, this will be the second HBO series to spin out of the Batman movie, with the first being a Gotham City PD series. The Batman is scheduled to open March 4th, 2022. No thoughts, no reactions?
Else?
No? All right. Rodrigo, what do you got?
HBO is also creating a series based on the video game The Last of Us and has tapped Nick Offerman to play the character Bill. The Last of Us takes place 20 years after civilization has been destroyed by a virus. And survivor Joel, played by Pedro Pascal, is hired to escort Ellie, played by Bella Ramsey, out of a quarantine zone. Offerman's character forms an uneasy alliance with the main characters and should only be a guest star in just a handful of episodes of the series.
Mm. I'm not sure how I feel about a quarantine zone series right now.
Last of Us...
it's a like faux zombie thing where the virus... causes your heads to like,
yeah, it's basically
blow
a
up
zombie
in this
thing,
fungus
but the,
thing.
The themes have always been, you know, that sort of thing where like we are the Walking Dead, you know, yeah. We are the Last of Us or whatever, mm-hmm. You know, it's like it's more about people. And if you've been paying attention to video game stuff over the past couple of years, The Last of Us Part Two was very controversial in the way that it did things, and it made a lot of people angry, and a lot of people are lauding it as like the greatest game ever. So it's interesting to go into the Last of Us series and see what they keep and see what they throw out.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Matthew, why don't you close out the news for us this week?
Speaking of things to keep and speaking things to throw out, the indie comic Battle Chasers is headed to television. The series was written and drawn by Joe Manganiello, telling the tale of a 9-year-old girl and her search for her dad, along with a swordsman named Garrison and a bounty hunter named Red Monica. The book ran for 9 issues,
in like 43 months between 1998 and 2001. There were some delays. The book actually got a video game adaptation in 2017, just a few years ago. Majerera says he will be returning to the comic next year in 2022 to finish the series, presumably so that the show doesn't go six issues and disappear for a decade and a half.
Man,
well, he really went into video games hard. Did you do play the video game? It was like sold a couple million copies of the video.
Yeah, I played the video game. I enjoyed it while I was playing it, but it was really buggy. I think they've fixed a lot of those bugs.
Was that a Kickstarter game?
I don't know. It was a THQ Nordic game.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if they Kickstarted it. But yeah, I will. I'm all for this series, but I will believe it when I see it.
I am really for the finish of the comic book series. I saw a solicitation for this like a couple of weeks ago that said it was definitely coming in 2022. And I think instead of doing single issues, I think it's going to be just one giant graphic novel sized book.
Right.
That finishes up the series.
What we had, and then closing it off, probably.
Yeah.
It's like when I was reading Battle Chasers, I didn't have a lot of money anyway, so I probably wouldn't have been able to buy like the issues if it had been coming out regularly. But yeah, it's like one day Battle Chasers is coming back. It is kind of this thing that just upsets me sometimes, because it's definitely one of the first like comics that I was like, this is a comic that's coming out now, as opposed to me like going to the library and reading like Crisis on Infinite Earths or whatever. It's like, it's coming out right now. These are my comics. This is my generation. It's not coming out anymore. Okay. All right. Well, I guess I'll just stick to Crimson then.
Yeah.
Did they is it live action or is it animated?
That's what they don't say. So I'm hoping it stays animated because I like Madrera's animation style.
Designs are half the fun.
So that should be really cool.
The video game is almost worth buying because it has animated cutscenes.
Oh,
so
nice.
You get to see animation of Joe Madrera's work. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. At one point, Battle Chasers was selling better than any other DC or Marvel comic when it came out. So something to keep in mind. I think there will be a lot of people who are interested in this when it arrives. So we will keep our eyes and ears peeled so that we can all jump on this when it arrives. That's just some of the news that is out this week. Listeners, you can join the conversation about these stories and more over on our Discord server. You can join the Major Spoilers Discord server for free, or you can link your Patreon account, patreon.com/majorspoilers, to the Discord server, and then you can access even more features, special features, exclusive content when you do that. Find out more about doing that at patreon.com/majorspoilers. In the meantime, you can join the Discord server for free. Link in that show note. So jump on that right away. We want to see 250 people join up before the end of the year. Get on that. Some other things we're going to get on. Some reviews. Matthew, what do you got this week in the reviews category?
I have a comic book known as The Human Target, issue 2 of Tom King and Gregory Smallwood's Human Target series has come out just last week. And much like issue 1, I had a very visceral response to this. If you have been reading the book, issue 1 revealed that Christopher Chance, who's a longtime DC character, predates a lot of people that you know by name. Goes back to like the 1950s, I think. I don't remember. Anyway, Christopher Chance was pretending to be Lex Luthor, as he does. He dresses up as the people who he's trying to bodyguard, and somebody poisoned him. And so now he has 12 days to live in a 12-issue limited series. So day 2 begins with him returning to his office, getting a slice of pizza from the pizza shop downstairs, with whom he has an agreement. He ignores the smell. They ignore the bullets. That's funny. That is actually really funny. But this is really Tom King doing kind of film noir. Stephen pointed out to me that the plot of issue 1 is basically the opening minutes of the movie DOA.
Yeah, I think that's the whole series is trying to emulate.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you, because as with any good noir story, you have the point where the cute young ingenue shows up in his office, and the cute young ingenue is Ice of Justice League International. Apparently, the belief is that one of the Justice League, the JLI team, tried to murder Lex Luthor. And so this whole issue is this complex back and forth dance between, you know, the scroungy detective and the pretty young girl. Did she do it? Is she playing me? Is she, you know, telling him stories? Is she telling him the truth? You know, they talk about Justice League International in a way that I really appreciate, because she's like, we were having these adventures and doing these things and we should have been traumatized, but we weren't. We laughed it off and had fun and we were friends. And I'm like, that's a great way to describe it. But throughout this issue, we also have this, I have this just sneaking horrible suspicion that maybe Ice is going to be the murderer and kill him. And of course, that's what you want out of this kind of story. And there's little tiny hints of romance. And she kind of mentions, I'm sure we're going to see, you know, what's going on with Guy Gardner, what's going on with Fire, where the members of the JLI are now. And as this issue comes together, it really feels like that she was a blonde, the kind of blonde that would make a bishop kick a hole in a stained glass window thing. You know, it's all really well done. And by the end of the issue, we realize a few things that she's been doing, but also the human target tells us, yeah, I knew this and I knew that. And here's the things that you readers don't know. And it's done so skillfully that I don't even mind that it's kind of a whole plot reference to this movie that I've never seen the original, but I saw the version with Dennis Quaid, and it's not good. But that's not the point. Human Target number 2 is very good, and the art is gorgeous. It is so pretty, and it has a color palette that I can only describe to you as 60s mod Star Trek pastels. And it is so wonderful, because I don't know if you guys remember Ice. Ice is a tiny woman with white hair who tends to wear powder blue. So she's wandering into his life, and his life is filled with these oranges and purples because, you know, he's dying. Purple is dying. And she's wearing these nice powder blue innocent colors, and it's just so beautiful. And you want to say, oh, man, don't turn out to be the killer, Ice. But I'm not going to tell you if she does or doesn't, because that's the whole point. It's a mystery. And now he only has 10 days left to figure out what's going on in his life. Now, I'm torn sometimes on Tom King as a writer. There are definitely, and, you know, I feel like a lot of writers have them, but there are definitely things that happen in every Tom King story that you can kind of time your watch by, just like a Geoff Johns story. Or an Andrew Vuk story, or a, you know, a Frank Miller story. There are going to be moments where you go, yeah, that's the thing that I've been afraid is going to happen. But I will tell you this, my friends, if you're still mad about Heroes in Crisis like I am, this issue will not necessarily make you forgive Tom King, but it'll make you realize that there's a good Tom King and an evil Tom King, and this is the good one. I'm going to give it 5 slices of meatloaf for Human Target number 2. I can't wait to see this collected in a big format, because I think it's going to look just so great.
Very good. That was out last week from DC Comics. You can pick that up in all the places that comic books are sold. Out this week from Image Comics is Nita Hawes' Nightmare Blog number 2 from Rodney Barnes and Will B. I don't know anything about this series, except I was like, ooh, Nightmare Blog, that's something I'm familiar with. But this is apparently spinning out of some other series or something. I have no idea. I also did not go back and read issue number 1, which is fine, because quite honestly, issue 2 reads like a number 1 issue. Like, I didn't need to know anything else about who Nita Hawes is. I didn't need to know anything about the little boy that pops up and tells her, hey, Nita, you know, someone's hit up the blog again, where apparently people are go to this blog and they post out to her if they need some paranormal investigation help. And then she goes out to it. Well, in this case, her latest one is Letter to a Dead Body and a blues, not a blues, but jazz musician. Who may or may not have sold to the devil. And this turns into kind of demon possession and what's going on and can we solve things out? And really her kind of introducing herself to the police and saying, here's what I do. You know, I'd like to help out in this investigation if I can. And, you know, just your typical paranormal investigation type story, which is well and good. And then at the end, we find out that the little boy is also a ghost that talks to her. Or that's what I gather from this, from all the information that they dropped. So this is a spooky little book. It was really kind of fun. It feels a little bit like a not quite CSI, but there's a lot of crime scene kind of analysis and investigation that's going on. So you've got your detective tale. You've got a little bit of your Kolchak thrown in the way that the story is being told from her point of view. You get a little X-Files thrown in because you got some, you know, some paranormal investigation and somebody who doesn't believe and somebody else who does believe. So you get all of that thrown in and you've got a pretty fun book. Now, the thing that concerns me, though, is what was issue one like? Was issue one just kind of setting up everything that was about to happen? Because quite honestly, if you did not read issue one, I really feel you will have zero problem coming in and reading issue two. So that might be problematic if, you know, if issue three also continues on with, oh, this is just like a number one and we're rehashing all this information again. That could be a problem. But the way this is, you know, oddly enough, the number two, it's a great jumping on point, is something that you never hear a comic book publisher say, but I will say it. Anita Haw's Nightmare Blog number two is a great jumping on point. You don't need to know anything about this world. Just know that here's somebody that does paranormal investigating and has a blog. That's all you need to do. That's all you need to know. The art is really well done. I liked it a lot. I think the story was well done and kind of hit the spooky spot that I do enjoy occasionally. And so I'm going to give this book 4 slices of meatloaf out of 5. Again, it's very enjoyable. There's some, you know, decapitations and some lots of demonic blood on the wall kind of stuff. So if that is stuff that bothers you, if you're afraid the devil's going to reach out through the pages and grasp your soul and never let you go and drag you down to the H.E. double hockey sticks place, then this book's probably not for you. But if you live in the real world and you understand that these are scary stories, then I think you're going to have a good time. So 4 slices of meatloaf for me, for Anita Haw's Nightmare Blog number 2 from Image Comics. We're going to jump ahead a couple of weeks to the end of the month, actually the end of the year, and Rodrigo sneaking in a comic that comes out just as the giant ball is about to fall.
Yeah. So this is Kaiju Max season 6, number 5.
Wow.
Which I assume this is the 6th volume of this.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That's what it means.
Yeah.
I had never, if I saw this comic before, I never paid attention to it.
Oh,
have
really?
You guys
yeah.
read it at all?
Yeah, we have, I know we've featured it a lot on Major Spoilers, and I know other reviewers have read it. I don't know if Matthew ever did a review. I flipped through it a couple times. It's your typical giant kaiju monsters in love kind of thing.
Pretty sure I've read it. I don't know if I reviewed it.
Yeah. So yeah, I was really not aware of it. Again, it just kind of slipped my notice. This is the 2nd to very lastest issue, right? So this is going, like, the series is going to end with season 6, number 6. Not an ideal jumping on point, definitely, but it does make me very interested in seeing previous stuff. Maybe we can throw it in the trades.
I'm putting it in the list for next year. It looks like the first slot is September of next year, Rodrigo.
Nice. Almost certainly I will be very sick that day and won't be able to do it, because that's how it goes with stuff I suggest. So Kaiju Max is the general premise is a bunch of space aliens are trying to take over the Earth. Humans have been dealing with kaiju for a while and they have them imprisoned. So some kaiju basically form a suicide squad kind of thing, and they're let out to fight the aliens. There are such kaiju as Zugaigo, the Hermanculoid, and Woofy. Woofy is, I don't know if Woofy is the dad or the son, but there's a lot of, there's a big revelation for this whale gorilla in this issue. It's interesting. I like the art a lot. It really manages to be cute and interesting and creepy at times. And I really love the colors. There's like sort of flashbacks to things that are black and white, but there's like a radioactive kaiju that's still green in the flashbacks. It's, you know, it's doing like, it really, the art is what's kind of drawing me here. Cause again, I haven't, been reading this. But it was, even though I don't know exactly what's going on, like there's a lot of like very like earnest, emotional stuff here. Right. And that I think is, I think it's good. It's like, it's, it makes me interested in going back and reading the earlier issues. So I'm going to give it four mm-hmm. slices of meatloaf. The art is cool. Love the character designs. And I'm interested to go back and check it out. If you are curious about Kaiju Max, definitely don't start with this issue. see if they have
not a great jumping on point.
Not a great jumping on point. But if you have been reading it, even if you've been reading it off and on, this is a good issue to pick up.
Yeah, I know we probably have all of these. That's why I was surprised, because I thought they were only up to volume 3, maybe volume 4, but I didn't realize they were up to 30 issues already. So, definitely be able to get that from Omni Press. So,
I mean, the last one of this volume is number 6, so maybe the volumes are only 6 issues each.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, Yeah, so we've got 3 books coming out from Omni Press next year on the podcast. We're also going to do, so as we get into the trade paperback this week, this year was all about Star Trek for Ashley, mm-hmm. who always was busy for every episode we did about Star Trek, or almost everyone.
I think it's fine, because I feel like she hated all of these.
I think she did too. I think she did too. We talked about how it was the monkey's paw curse in that she wanted Star Trek. We gave her Star Trek, but it was all the crossover. So we did, you know, Transformers and, you know, Green Lantern and
Doctor
some
Who.
Other stuff. Yeah, Doctor Who, the X-Men. Next year, we're going to continue on that idea, not with Star Trek, but I really kind of like going through a series and talking about it. And one of the things that was just announced recently was that Taika Waititi is doing an adaptation of the Incal. And so we're going to look at the three volume run of the Incal. And then of course they've got some other stuff that is not by Jodorowsky or Moebius that kind of bookends that series. I don't know if we'll do that, but I know we have all of the volumes in that. That's Humanoids that have released that series. So kind of as a lead up to that movie being made and being released, we're going to look at all of those next year. We're going to continue on with some newspaper strips next year. What else do we have next year? We've got some more crossover stuff. So next year we do have, let's see, we're going to start the year off. So just in a couple of weeks, we'll have Spider-Man and Superman teaming up. We'll have Batman and Spider-Man teaming up. I think there's one more Spider-Man team up. I have to look down on my list and find out what it is. But so we have some team ups like that and a whole bunch of other stuff. We're even going to look at Captain Stern, you know, from the heavy metal movie. We're going to go look at all of his tales that have been collected next year as well. So there's a lot of stuff already on the list. There's only one or two more slots of stuff that I haven't filled out yet. I think next year is going to be a pretty fun year to look at stuff. Yes, Tintin is back next year. We do have another Asterix coming out next year. There's a lot of things that I've got lined up for next year. So it's going to be a fun year of shows here on the Major Spoilers Podcast. Why? Because we're doing it all for you. Because, you know, as we always talk about, we know that you love comics. We do too. And we've got a lot of comics to cover, including this week's Star Trek Planet of the Apes, The Primate Directive from IDW Publishing. Scott Tipton, David Tipton, with art by Rachel Stout or Stott. This is not a, as with, I think, all of the crossovers, except for maybe the Transformers one. Mm-hmm. All the other crossovers have dealt with crossing over into another universe. Like the Green Lantern was crossover into another universe. X-Men was a crossover into another universe. Doctor Who was kind of that. And certainly Legion of Superheroes was crossover. But this one is definitely a crossover. I want to say the Transformers kind of felt like it was not like a crossover into another universe. It was like the Transformers existed in the Star Trek universe.
I think there was a brief reference to some sort of MacGuffin at the beginning where the, I don't know, but yeah.
So this one is the Klingons had developed some kind of gate technology to allow them access to another universe, kind of like going over into the Mirror Mirror universe. This is the original series. So we get Kirk and we get Spock and Scotty and Bones and all of those guys. But we find out why the Klingons haven't been invading Federation space is because they can find out they can go and invade a whole other universe and do whatever they want. And they go and the Klingons go to the Earth of that other universe and find out, wait a minute, you blew it up. This is our planet. We find out that they're on that cursed planet of the apes where, yes, we do get to see Taylor and we do get to see Dr. Zaius and we do get to see Zira and doctors. We get to see all of those people in this thing. And it turns out, I don't know what the reasoning is. There's not really a, I'm trying to figure out the Klingon motivations because the Klingons are supplying the apes with munitions so that they can take over Ape City so that they can wipe out the rest of the human population. I'm not really sure what the motivation is of the Klingons getting themselves involved with the apes. Because they could just take over the planet if they want. In fact, when Taylor finds out that, that Kirk and these guys have a ship, he's like, let's just strafe the whole place. We can take out all these apes instantly. And they're like, no, that's not what we do. So why are the Klingons providing the munitions to the apes? Did any of you guys figure that out?
I did not. It's not super clear what they have to gain with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I think kind of what I got is that they have it in for Earth, right? It's like, this is an Earth. This is where humans come from. So they want to like keep them subjugated and giving stuff to the apes will help that. But also there's like multiple splintering ape factions form.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I was never like, I understand what the apes' decisions were and, you know, mm-hmm. This like those seem to be in line and make sense if this like shadowy arms dealer shows up and says, hey, I can give you super duper weapons. It's like right. It makes sense that, you know, somebody would react that way. But what exactly the Klingons had to gain is actually kind of hard to figure out.
There's a hand wave about the Organian peace treaty from Balance of Power in the original series. Mm-hmm. And I think the implication is that we can't conquer Earth in our reality, but if we conquer this other reality, we're not breaking the Organian Treaty. But it's not really very well developed. It's just sort of hey.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is
why it happens.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is if you're in another reality, you're dealing with primitive man and apes. You can take over Earth pretty darn easily if you want without, you know, having to deal with some arms thing. Now, I do understand where the motivations of are, what the motivations are of the apes. You know, the scientists want to be scientists. The philosophers want to be philosophers. The apes want to fight. They also know that apes don't kill apes. But they also know that, and it's spelled out through several issues, that the ape population has grown too much and they can't cultivate the land to feed themselves. So they need to expand into new territory. But those new territories have scary things. So that gets into, what is it, the conquest of the Planet of the Apes? What's the one where they blow themselves up?
That would be, this comes in between the second one, Beneath the Planet of the Apes, and the third one, Escape from the Planet of the Apes. Conquest comes after Escape. And I believe that the events of Escape change the timeline.
Yeah, but the whole thing is in Conquest, which is the one with that has the missile silos and the crazy. Okay. So in Beneath the Planet of the Apes,
they
know that there's something out there that's keeping the apes away. And so nobody wants to go out there. Well, now they have these new weapons that they can go and conquer and they can secure their food supply. So I can understand all the motivations from the apes in why they want to do this. It's only when one of the lesser apes decides that he's going to go back and take over all of the apes, the ape city, that things get a little mixed up as far as morals go in the ape side, I guess. So yeah, I can understand the motivation of the apes. I don't understand the motivation of the Klingons. I totally understand the motivation of Taylor, because Taylor is like, I want my planet back. I know we can rebuild civilization if only your technology will, will take care of all these damn dirty apes. And Kirk has to explain the prime directive to him, and they get into fisticuffs, and Taylor tries to get up onto the Enterprise to steal a shuttle to come back and take care, do the job himself. I can understand Taylor's motivations in this as well.
I gotta say, as far as the completely prerequisite fight that like the good guys need to get into, right? Because it's a crossover.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is the one that makes the most sense.
Like, right.
Their writing of Charlton Heston's motivation is mm-hmm. strong, and there's a prime directive. So it's like, it's the sort of thing where like, in most crossovers like this, when they first meet, they have some sort of misunderstanding and they fight. Here, I mean, there's like a very brief moment where he like shoots at them because he thinks they're apes. But the mm-hmm. moment that he sees that they're not, he's fine. The fight doesn't come until later when they have like an actual like moral philosophical disagreement. And I'm like, that's kind of a breath of fresh air in a crossover book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Tiptons know the original series inside and out. That is such a beautiful Kirk sequence. Because, I mean, Taylor is literally trying to beat his brains out, and he's doing the whole Kirk leap around, jump around, but he's also, Taylor, George, you don't understand. You have to listen. What are you going to do? Just destroy them. It's so well written for Kirk. And, you know, a lot of times when you get Jim Kirk, you get kind of a parody, mm-hmm. like, you know, that impression that I did a minute ago. But this feels like solid second season thoughtful James T. Kirk, and he's clearly torn by having to support the prime directive and not mess up this world, but he's also wanting to make sure that, you know, Colonel Taylor doesn't do something that he'll regret. He doesn't want this man to become a killer. And
yeah,
it's really nicely done.
I think that is the big quandary, right? So the moral dilemma that the Enterprise crew has is, yes, we're in a different universe. We still have to uphold the prime directive. And even though that is really, you know, figuratively killing Taylor, they're right. still doing it. And I like that everybody is like, no, this is what the prime directive is. This is why we set it up. It's to prevent these things from happening. And Taylor, who's a man out of time already, just this total lack or total misunderstanding of why the prime directive is so important to the Federation. He's only thinking of himself. He's only thinking of past Earth and not the current situation that they're in. His dilemma seems to be, I'm just out for revenge, even though the apes really are never to blame for anything that happens to Taylor, except that they, you know, they treat him like a cattle. That's his thing. But, you know, the people to blame for Taylor's situation is Taylor's people. You know,
Taylor's actual cohorts, which makes it even more tragic that the last two pages of this issue are the end of Beneath the Planet of the Apes, where
they literally blow
up the Earth.
And that's where I think the Prime Directive also kind of gets into a bit of a problem, right? Because they beam Zira and what's the other guy's name?
Cornelius. Zira and Dr. Milo.
Yeah, they beam them up to the Enterprise, or they come down at one point. In any case, they have to get Scotty to try to explain some technology to the apes. And he starts going off about how time travel works and slingshotting around the sun. And one of the members of the Enterprise has to say, now Scotty, don't give him too much information. He's like, oh, you know, I always get this way when I start talking about engineering and all this stuff. And then that does play a big important role for conquest of the Planet of the Apes, because as we know, they do get slingshot back in time in the movies. And it's the only way that they do that is because the apes have figured out that, number one, they have Taylor's ship that they've taken up into space, but they've also been listening to Scotty and they're like, huh, maybe we can try this slingshot effect. Now,
doesn't help that they stole a tricorder.
Yeah. Now the dirty apes. Now the destroying of the planet, that is something that really surprised me, because that is just Klingon sour grapes, because the Klingons realize that they can't have it, and so they just set the atmosphere on fire, and then the nukes that were that were buried beneath the ground all go off. And so it's the Klingons who are just like, yeah, we don't, if we can't have this, then nobody can. Let's just blow the whole thing up, which I think that's what they should have done from the very beginning. They, if they didn't want Earth around, unless they wanted it for resources, they should have just come in and destroyed it and said, ha ha, we have destroyed the Earth in another dimension.
That's not the way I read it. Spock actually mentions the explosion of the cobalt bomb, which is end of Beneath the Planet of the Apes. Taylor blows up the cobalt bomb and destroys the world.
No, that's not how I read it. I read it that the Klingons fired down into the atmosphere, and that set off the cobalt bomb, which set the atmosphere on fire. Rodrigo, who's right on this?
I don't see them firing.
Rodrigo's muted.
Sorry, I also apologize profusely while muted about being muted. I read it like you did, Stephen, at first, but that's because it doesn't make any sense, right? Unless you know the ending of, I guess, the other movie.
Because Kirk is like, the ship indicating engine trouble, and then there's a massive explosion.
Yeah, and do we know what happens to the Klingons then?
Do they get blown up? They blew up. They blew up their own ships, and then they got away.
Kor escaped to the portal. Yeah,
because Kor appears again. Kor has to survive theoretically. I mean, this isn't the Prime continuity, so I mean, they could kill him.
Sure. It says he's slowing down, Captain, just as he's approaching the portal. Sensors indicate engine trouble. Then there's a big explosion, and they're going, what happened?
Spock says Earth's entire atmosphere has been ignited. All signs indicate detonation of a massive cobalt bomb.
Yeah, well, that's not Taylor setting that off, though.
Taylor sets that off at the end of Beneath the Planet of the Apes. Well, they're the mutants involved, but yeah.
Yeah, so that's, yeah, so I don't know. I just interpreted because they were slowing down, and you see that, maybe it's their speed lines that it's in their little tiny view screen in that panel. Maybe I just interpreted their speed lines from the Klingon ship because the Earth is behind it as a beam being shot down to the planet. And I just assumed that the Klingons, when that set it off, triggered those bombs. So there's nothing in here. And even in fact, when they
Planet of the Apes, Charlton Heston literally is dying.
Yes, we know.
Slams his hand down on the bomb.
We know that part. We know that part, but this is not the movie. In fact, when they leave Taylor and what's her name? Nira or what's
Nova.
The what's,
Nova?
Nova. They're like, we're going to go and do something. And so they're waving very peacefully. And so then the next thing you know, they're up on the ship and they're having their fight. So there would be very difficult time for Taylor to get to the Forbidden Zone.
Yeah, it seems like it would be very fast.
And blow up the cobalt bombs. So that's why I just assumed that it was a Klingon thing.
Yeah, confusing. It's confusing.
Yeah.
It's like, we all know this is how this version of Earth goes, so let's just skip to it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of in there, I feel like. I don't know. Now I'm confused. Well, I still believe that's what happened, and it just wasn't rendered very well, because I don't see any indication of an attack by the Klingons. But
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. In that one little tiny panel where they're watching Kor's ship try to get away, if you look in that panel, the Klingon, are those birds of prey? Those aren't birds of prey.
Yeah, it's a bird of prey.
Bird of prey. If you look at it, it's warp lines or it's speed lines that are coming off if its nacelle is blue. And it looks like, because the Earth is behind it, it looks like it is kind of shooting something down. So if you're looking at this in a comic book page and you're seeing that little tiny view screen, you might say, oh, they're shooting something down at the planet, because the very next panel is kaboom. And everybody going, what was that? So.
Well, that's the other two birds of prey exploding because they can't get through the asteroid field.
No, those are the panels before that.
Maybe not the clearest ending.
Like I said, I really don't understand the motivation of the Klingons. I don't understand what they're doing in this story, except that they are the plot device that I guess we need. I mean, it could have just been the Klingons could have just been there on the planet like they were with Transformers, trying to get resources. Why couldn't they just be on this planet trying to get Earth's resources? That would make a heck of a lot more sense than, well, we're equipping these apes so that they'll be on our side. You don't have to worry about the Federation. It doesn't exist.
Sweep in and take over.
They could. I mean, it really makes zero sense. They're so. I mean,
yeah, it's like
the world of the Planet of the Apes is. Yeah, exactly. The technology gap is so huge here that Klingons, Federation, Vulcans, whoever, Ferengi could come in and take over the Earth in this universe. So yeah, I don't like the gimmick that is used to do the crossover in this book. I really don't.
And a lot of times that's going to be the question, you know, does it work for you or not? Is can they make this make, you know, not sense, I guess, but can you make it believable to you as a reader?
Yeah, I think the Legion of Superheroes one did a really good transporter beam mirror universe incident thing. I think that worked really well. The Transformers one was fine. I mean, we've just been buried here this entire time. Fine, whatever. The Green Lantern one I didn't find was very believable, you know, the Black Lantern ring bit. And then the X-Men one, I think they just appeared, didn't they? Wasn't there just like...
They're like chasing the Shi'ar.
Oh, okay.
Or like Deathbird or whatever.
Okay. I think the Legion of Superheroes... Oh, and the Doctor Who one made perfect sense too. That one was... That was a good time jumping thing. So those universes, the Legion of Superheroes and the Doctor Who ones, I think made sense. This one doesn't make sense. And I rank this one fairly low on my Star Trek crossover list of all these comics that we've read. What did you think, Rodrigo?
I mean, when you look at the whole thing, like, I am actually not a big fan of crossovers like this. I would have never picked up Star Trek crossover with Planet of the Apes ever. Like, even if there wasn't anything else to read, I don't know that I would have picked this up. Because generally, I tend to get really caught up on the fact that the themes of one really don't work with the themes of the other, right? And that it's in that, like, intermarriage of those themes where it tends to make or break the book. I'll agree that the Doctor Who one, because I think its themes are closer to Star Trek's, largely because they're both shot in like a 10x10 cardboard box. You can make that a lot more easily than you could with superheroes, as like, even if what they tell you is like, oh, here's the thing that makes sense, this is happening. It's like a lot of times it's like, eh, I don't know about that. I don't think this was the worst one we read. I feel like I was like, I actually feel like the Star Trek Doctor Who one was actually very slow. This one tends to move. It's wordy, but it's moving, you know? So, I mean, it was okay. I liked it more than I expected to like it, again, because there's that moment where I'm like, oh yeah, this guy's been through a lot. Like, they basically catch up to him at the end of the first movie, right? Or that's what it feels like anyway.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, like, this guy would want to commandeer a shuttle. Like, that's a thing that could happen. That's interesting. Let's see what they do with it. And they do it Star Trek, you know, like, he talks him down instead of having a shootout or whatever. So it's like, that was enjoyable. That was fine.
Yeah. What about you, Matthew?
I feel like the biggest problem here is what Rodrigo pointed out, is that Star Trek is a happy utopian future and Planet of the Apes is a terrible, terrible dystopian future. And sticking them together really requires kind of a devotion to the meta narrative here, because, you know, a scene that is someone who might possibly look like Charlton Heston acting against someone who might possibly look like William Shatner is great for me as the big old nerd thinking how great this would be in real life if we saw it. But it never really does gel into much of anything other than a standard Prime Directive episode of the original Trek. And don't get me wrong, I've said it before in this very episode, and I'll say it again. These guys write some good Trek. They know their Star Trek up and down. What the Tiptons don't, I feel, have is the same reverence for the tone and feel of Planet of the Apes. This all, I think, is taking place, if I remember correctly, and I've seen the Apes movies like 100 times, in the last third of the second movie, transitioning and explaining the joke, or not the meta joke, but the narrative thing that gets us to the inexplicable, oh my God, apes have a space and time traveling machine in the beginning of the third one, Escape from the Planet of the Apes. So I feel like the old answering a question that nobody asked kind of fits here. How did the apes go back in time? Because we wanted $77,000. But I do agree with Steven. It is very, very unclear at the end here what's actually happening. And that happens more than once during the set. Yeah. I think this is going to be one of those books that's really more for the Star Trek super fan or the 19 guys who are super fans of the Planet of the Apes franchise, like Otter.
Hey, listen, let's see more Planet of the Apes cosplay at Comic-Con going forward. We see a lot of Star Trek, or not Star Trek, Star Wars, whatever your Trek 509. Wars. Yeah, your 509 thing running around. Let's see some apes. Let's see some apes marching through the convention. Legion. Yeah, let's see some apes marching through the, in fact, mash your Star Wars with your Planet of the Apes. Put all your apes inside of Stormtrooper costumes. That'll be something that'll get me to pay attention to your 501st. There you go.
That'll make you pass out from lack of oxygen.
Maybe. Who knows? But definitely, let's see some more Planet of the Apes cosplays. Let's see some tailors running around in their what kind of skins is he wearing? Yeah, let's see you running around in your pelts and screaming you blew it up.
I found it, Steven.
What?
Page 107, Captain's Log Supplemental. We've been chasing Kor's ship for 3 days. So literally in the break between page 106 and 107, there's like 4 days missing.
And that's the entirety of that movie.
It's the entire, the last third of Beneath the Planet.
I don't know, because it just seems like when they leave Taylor that he seems to be at peace with what he has done. He says, for better or worse, this is my home, Captain. I'm not going to abandon it.
Yeah, and then he blows up the world.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if that is an excuse enough, especially if you've been, why would they be chasing him for 3 days? Are they just zipping around the Earth for 3 days?
Yeah,
because the portal is literally at the Earth.
We've had some close skirmishes, but it's just cat and mouse. He's playing with us, waiting for something. Maybe Kor's waiting for them to blow up the world.
I just assumed that it was the Klingons that were responsible for it.
But in this either, so I don't know.
No. Yeah, so that's why you kind of maybe have to take that part of the story out or disregard it. I don't know. It just was... The Klingons make zero sense in this. I personally enjoyed the Prime Directive stuff and trying to convince someone else who is not understanding of the Prime Directive of the merits of the Prime Directive. I also like how there's discussion of, do we break the Prime Directive or we don't break the Prime Directive, and that Kirk has to go through that. I like that part of the story, and for this dystopian future, which I guess it's a dystopian future if you're a human, but maybe this is a paradise for apes. I don't know. Maybe this is ape utopia.
I don't know. They're kind of racially stratified. So
yeah, they do talk about being in a caste system. So bottom line for me is, this is kind of a pass for me. I enjoyed it for what it is, but this is not something that I think you would want to buy and put on your shelf unless you're a completist for some reason. I'm sure that there is going to be some awful takes going forward in the next year and a half that say this is the reason why IDW is in the position that they're in now. But this is definitely not the best of IDW's Star Trek, nor is it the best of Planet of the Apes. I don't know if they had Planet of the Apes. I know Boom Studios had Planet of the Apes. I'm guessing IDW must have also had Planet of the Apes at some point, but this is not a good example of the best of IDW's Star Trek. So this is something I think you could probably leave off your shelf. Final thought, Matthew?
Yeah, I agree. You can probably skip this one.
Rodrigo?
Most people are going to be coming from the Trek side, so... Aside from, again, the confusing ending, this makes for like a pretty okay episode of Original Trek.
There you go. All right. That is where we're going to wrap it up for this issue next week. Oh, Spider-Man. We get more Spider-Man next week. I wonder why. Oh, finally, unless something horrible happens, knock on wood, right? Unless something horrible happens between now and next week, we're getting a new Spider-Man movie hitting the theaters. So we might as well talk about some Spider-Man comics. We're going to do that next week on the Major Spoilers Podcast. Why? Because we know that you love comics and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
If I had the X-ray vision of a Superman, I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Stark Raven, rich like a man of iron, might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. Would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being in the Middle East with a King Santo and soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2021 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.